Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jerry Dulac in just a few moments. But first, our play-by-play call of the day, Mike Tirico with the privilege at 18.
Everyone quiets down, back behind the ball. Woods puts it.
Get in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion. One of the great comeback stories in American sports history. Masters number 5, Major number 15, and Augusta National roars like never before. Woods hugs Joey LaCava's caddy, a fist pump. The hat is off. He's waving to the patrons, smiling and soaking in the moment. A moment he thought he'd never see again. Walks over, looking for anybody to hang out with. Now he's going to walk back amongst the patrons. The family's waiting, two fists clenched as he walks between the ropes, a walk he's made before. And near the spot where he hugged his dad when he won in 97, he hugs his son 22 years later.
And it's a perfect lead-in to Jerry Dulac, who knows more about golf than anybody I know. Jerry, welcome. What was that moment to you like?
Well, Steve, always nice to chat with you. You know, I've been to 27 of these Masters, and I've done like 50-some major championships. I've seen Tiger win. Of his 15, I've probably seen him win 8 to 9 of them. I missed the British Opens. I missed the PGA. But that is, to me, I started doing the Masters in 88, so I missed Nicklaus in 86. Okay. And then I had a 5-year lull beginning in 93 when I switched newspapers, so I missed Tiger in 97. So the two most significant Masters of our generation, I've missed. But of the 27 I've been to, and I've seen some good ones, including Phil Mickelson and Ben Crenshaw, and some dramatic ones with, you know, Adam Scott. This is at the top of the ones that I've been to, obviously, for any number of reasons. And you know, the comeback, it's Tiger, it's the Masters, it's number 5. But I think the other thing that is resonating with everybody, Steve, is the reaction afterward, the unbridled and unrestrained joy and excitement at winning. You know, we saw a human side of Tiger. He never lets anybody in to see who he is, and yesterday he did. He was just thrilled and jubilant that he won and capped his comeback, and to have his kids there. You know, we've never seen that side of Tiger before, and that is resonating with a lot of people. So it wasn't just what he did on the golf course and his comeback and winning number 5. I think it was all framed with what we saw afterward, and it was really cool. And it wasn't just a sign of respect. It shows you how much the players actually like Tiger. 6, 8, 10 of them waiting for him at the clubhouse, you know, including Ian Poulter. You know, I thought that was very telling as well and very cool.
Because, Jerry, this is a comeback of not just of game, physical, but it's also an emotional and PR comeback for this guy all rolled into one.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, his fall from grace, how far he fell on the golf course, how far he fell in the public eye, you know, his issues with his marital infidelity, you know, the issues with prescription drugs, the embarrassing mugshot of him, you know, trying to play his way back when he had the chip yips. I mean, you know, it was embarrassing and humiliating to him, especially off the course, but on the course as well. And then, of course, four knee surgeries, four back surgeries, the latest being the spinal fusion surgery 2 years ago. When I, at the time, I have always said, Steve, that I have never seen a professional athlete at his height fall so far. I can't think of another who was the most dominant player, not only of his sport, but arguably of all time, fall to the levels that he did, both from a PR standpoint, a public perception standpoint, and just where his game was, all because of injuries. And to come back from all that, from where he was, that to when he even says he never thought he could play again, but even when he tried and was just so god-awful, you know, it looked like it was you couldn't believe it was Tiger Woods, and yet here he is. You know, I don't want to say as sharp as ever, but yesterday, as good as ever yesterday, for sure, and to ascend back to the top of his sport.
Let's talk about what we saw over the last few days, especially yesterday. As you watched him play, what was the level of patience and intelligence with which he played yesterday?
Well, there's no question that's what he exhibits best. And the person who was showing the most excellence and patience and resolve was Francesco Molinari for 65 holes. And even when he, you know, I don't want to say I don't understand the shot at 12, because I do. It hit some wind. And he just missed his line. He knew there was wind up there, and he figured if it caught his ball, it would end up in a bunker, and he was fine with that. Well, he missed his line, he missed the bunker, and it hits the bank and it comes back in. All that did was tie him for the lead. And I thought, even though he blew the two shots there, that wasn't going to hurt him. But what it did do, and Tiger said afterward, it led everybody back in the golf tournament, including him. And from that moment on, you saw Tiger be Tiger. He kicked into his major championship mode. Not that he hadn't earlier, but he plays to the middle of the green, 50 feet away. That's fine. I'm not going to do what they did. There's no point in it. And, you know, take the two putts and make the par. His iron game was just ridiculously sharp. But, you know, it was typical Tiger. Some crooked drives. He led the field in greens and regulation, but he was 47th in driving accuracy. But he kept his calm. He kept his composure. And, you know, he never changed his focus. You saw that the entire time.
As you said, you didn't cover the 86 Nicklaus moment, but I remember a quote from Nicklaus in 86 where he said, I had to remember in that fourth round how to win again. Now, I know Woods won at East Lake. Was that there that element in a major that, hey, look, I had to keep reminding myself how to win again?
You know, Steve, that's a good point. He was never asked that, and so I can't honestly answer that question. But, you know, I think the closest way I could answer that, it was when we were talking to him afterward, and he talked about, you know, not having to feel the major championship pressure and being in the hunt again, because he was there at the British Open and he was there at the PGA. So it wasn't like he had to, quote, relearn what it was like in the pressure of a major championship, because he had been in there already last summer, but he failed both times. You know, I think there's probably a certain amount of a truth that was occurring, but I don't know that he would have said that was a case, as in light of the fact that he said, you know, just having gone through the majors, the previous two majors, playing in the final group at the British Open and finishing second at the PGA, that put him back in the hunt, showed him that he could get back in the hunt, and now all he had to do, I don't want to say convince himself he could win, that showed him he had the ability to win, but this convinced him he can win.
You obviously know what it's like to cover transcendent figures. Obviously, just sticking with the sport of golf, Arnold Palmer's a transcendent figure in the game that, that obviously you knew. When you look at Woods as a transcendent figure, and then I'm going to draw it back to Arnold, you know, Arnold Palmer knows what this is like. Wait, what kind of impression did Arnold Palmer give you of what he thought of Tiger Woods, albeit it was the younger version?
Well, let me start by saying that J.J. Watt tweeted something last night that I retweeted, and he said, more than any other athlete in any other sport, Tiger Woods has the people in the palm of his hands, or basically is what he said, when he's winning. And that's true. I can't think of another athlete in another sport who drew so much attention to his sport and even outside of it than Tiger. Maybe Michael Jordan in our modern era. You know, LeBron James, maybe somebody would argue that. But J.J. Watt's right. I mean, Tiger, you know, Tiger transcends sports. And, you know, he's the most recognized athlete in the world. And, you know, the difference between he and Palmer, Palmer brought the masses to, he brought the game to the masses and the masses to the game. He made it cool, you know, because he was an average guy growing up. Yeah, he grew up at the country club, but he was the son of the groundskeeper. And Arnold was a kind of an everyman's hero. But Tiger, you know, eclipsed that with even Arnold's numbers with his greatness as a champion, but never as the type of figure who the public identified with because of Tiger's, you know, how aloof and dismissive he could be. Then, of course, what happened to him with his marriage, and of course, you know, the infidelity issues. And I think knowing Arnold and knowing what he thought, obviously he liked Tiger, but I think he thought Tiger went about it the wrong way. And I'm not just talking about what happened off the golf course. I think the way he comported himself on the golf course, Phil Mickelson is more like Arnold Palmer on the golf course than Tiger. But kind of like Jack in his later years after Arnold was done being the hero, Jack, you know, the public warmed up to Jack. They didn't always love Jack. They looked at him as Arnold's enemy, even though they were friends. But Tiger, now in his second career, if you will, you know, the people are embracing him even more. You know, Steve, you probably have heard me say to you in the past, I was never a fan of Tiger as a person, but I was a fan of his greatness. And
I'm with you. Yep.
I think that's the way a lot of people who knew Tiger, you know, beyond his circle, of course, I think that's the way a lot of people looked at it.
Yeah, in fact, I think I've said to you before, Jerry, that I know when I've covered a golf tournament, and, for example, he's been in, I always found, for example, the gallery, the patrons, whatever word you want to use, you had a group out there that was rooting for Tiger. He was their guy. But you also had a group out there that was rooting against him, was hoping he'd dump the thing into the lake. And then you had the curiosity factor. Now it seems like he's got everybody with him.
Yeah, and certainly at Augusta National, where the crowds, the galleries, are just a little bit different. I will say this about Tiger. For all, and I've always said this, one of the things I do admire about him, certainly respect about him beyond the golf course, is everybody wants a piece of Tiger, whether it's the fans, of course, the sponsors, the tournament organizers, the players. Everybody wants a piece of this guy, the media. And yet, whenever he's been in a public forum, in any press conference or any public appearance, he has always comported himself as a gentleman. Never bit off a question, never was a smart aleck, never got angry, never got irritated. He always comported himself as the ultimate professional for a guy who everybody in the world wanted a piece of. And I've always gave him credit for that, and he is still that way. That's a difficult thing to do, to never lose your composure. And I don't know that I've ever seen Tiger in a public setting, or, you know, with the media or any of those issues where the camera's on him, where he's ever either lost his composure or even got snippy and kind of condescending. He's always, he might just, you know, smile and not answer a question, but I never saw him bite anybody's head off, and I've always given credit for that.
Did he, I'm sure he was asked about this, how'd the answer go when he was asked about how much work it took to just get to the point where he could be just competing, let alone winning?
Well, there's no question, and I think that's what was fueling everything that transpired yesterday afterward. You know, when you consider that, you know, it's only been 2 years and 4 days since he had that back fusion surgery, and to be able to, when he couldn't walk, as he says, couldn't sit down, couldn't lay down, swinging a club wasn't even an issue, and to be able, and to think that, you know, I'm never going to play golf again. Nick Faldo had said during the endless hours of Golf Channel broadcast and on TV that 2 years ago at the Champions Dinner, the Tuesday night before the tournament, that Tiger told him he doubts he'll ever be able to play again. Well, it was 2 weeks later, 15 days later to be exact, that he had this spinal fusion surgery, and that saved him. And he found that not only, you know, his goal was to have a quality of life, not to play golf again. And then he found out he could swing a club again, and that in 2 years that he's back. And really, you know, it was the end of last year. You know, he regained his speed, and while he's cut back on that now, he found out that his back can hold up to all that. He can't practice as much as he would like, but to be able, you know, at 43, to be able to recapture so much of that and to win again, you know, that is just so personally gratifying to him. That's what elicited that emotion that we saw.
You and I, and this will be the final question, I'll let you go because I really appreciate the time. You and I, of course, will be interested in the golf season anyway because you and I love the sport. This obviously now changes the dynamics of how exciting the golf season could be, or at least interesting. You got the PGA next month, Bethpage. Who's won there before? You have the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Who's won there before? And then there's Royal Portrush, which nobody really knows. I mean, how interesting now has this dynamic become because of what happened the last 4 days?
Well, you know, Steve, I was at both of those victories in the U.S. Open, the dominating one, you know, the 10-shot victory, a 15-shot victory, whatever the heck it was, at Pebble in 2000, and then when he won at Bethpage and held off a Phil Mickelson. Obviously, he will head there as the favorite. I will say this, he's familiar with those golf courses, and I am certainly not taking anything away from what he did yesterday. But I think it was very advantageous for him that he won that major at Augusta National. Now, shocking to me was that he had gone 14 years now in total between victories there. That was just incredible to me and to Jack Nicklaus, who once said he thought Tiger could win 10 of them after he won 4 in 9 years. To go 14 years without one was just, to me, was mind-boggling. But I'm not so sure, and this is not to take anything away from him, I'm not so sure that what happened yesterday would have happened if he were playing maybe Belrive or Riviera in a major or something like that. You know, that's his, quote, that's his major championship, quote, home. That's where he is most comfortable. That's where he is most revered. That's where he's made his mark. And I think all those things conspired to help him along. But there is no question, he, as we saw at the British Open and the PGA, unless he has some physical setback, there is no reason Steve, that he won't go and contend, and the entire golf world will be abuzz again in anticipation that Tiger is back, no question.
And yeah, and there's the other part too, because of he, you know, going every single year, the number of times he's been there. One thing about Augusta National, he knows where to miss. And that's sometimes that's underrated about knowing where to miss. Okay, I want to go here, but if I miss there, I'm going to be fine because I'm in the right spot.
Well, I think there was no greater evidence of that, Steve, yesterday than when Francesco Molinari waters the tee shot at 12, hits that gust of wind, misses his line, hits the gust of wind, goes in Rays Creek. And Tiger had already watched the two players before him, Koepka and Ian Poulter, do the same thing. So now he has watched three of his competitors right in front of his eyes hit the ball in the water, and Tiger knew, even though he was probably going there anyway because it was Sunday, but Tiger knew, what's the point of that? He's going right over those bunkers where it's a little shorter a line, and if so what, he has a 50-foot putt, that's okay. I know that not to go at that pin, and he didn't. And that just comes from years of experience and playing and knowing, why should I even, you know, take a chance? At this point, I'm probably going to be tied for the lead, and I'm just going to knock it on the middle of the green. And we saw him make decisions like that the entire time. So that goes back, I think, to your question about his experience and intelligence playing that golf course.
Jerry, absolute pleasure. You know how much I love talking about this stuff with you, always, on any topic, but especially this. Thanks so much for the valuable time today.
Well, Steve, you're welcome. I always enjoy chatting with you and always enjoy chatting golf with you.
Jerry Dulac joining us. Oh, man, is it fun to talk with him. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and of course we'll talk to him about the Steelers here at some point, too. The draft's coming up. But, yeah, boy, was that great to talk with him about that. Ooh, what? That was special yesterday. Absolutely special. All right, Dave Cecchini coming up, the head football coach at Bucknell on the Bucknell Spring Game. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
We upgrade all the time.
My computer.
My TV.
My phone.
Isn't it time you upgraded your vehicle? Upgrade your trade now at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Wanna see you in Kia.
It's the second annual Upgrade Your Trade event. Now is the time because SMC is making it easier than ever with above market value for your trade. Plus, save $4,500 on a 2019 Kia Sereno LX, now just $26,415. A 2019 Kia Optima S has $4,000 in savings, now only $22,910. And SMC is still offering a $99 a month lease on a 2019 Kia Forte LXS for just 36 months. And all include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. It's the second annual Upgrade Your Trade event at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Leases for 36 months, 10,000 miles per year. No security deposit required. Tax and tags extra. Offers expire 4/30/19. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Whether it's auto, home, life, business, you have a bundle, whatever it may be, they're going to find you exactly the right insurance so you're covered, and they are going to get you the best price. And if there's a claim, nobody goes to work harder for the customer than Purdy Insurance. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle, on the Penn State football blue-white game. Our thanks to Jerry Dulac, who just left Augusta National. After watching Tiger Woods win his fifth green jacket and his 15th major, and
yeah, he was cruising through West Virginia when he called. He was going through some construction, so we were concerned.
He was great.
He was awesome. I said, "You didn't drop the call. You didn't drop the signal at all." He was concerned it was going to be a little little sticky in a few spots, but that was worked out perfect.
He is one of the great guys out there. I mean, yeah, it's great to talk with somebody that knows it, gets it, doesn't go overboard on you know, a commentary. It just tells you exactly what happened and why it did. We're going to hear from Dave Cicchini here in a few moments, the head football coach at Bucknell on the Bucknell spring game, which was Friday night. Was the color analyst in attendance Friday
night? He was there, yes.
Wow. Obviously charging for autographs again.
Oh, maybe. Could be. I don't know if you had, know if you had a blue Sharpie and an orange Sharpie in tow. Don't know that. No specifics on that. But yeah, he and Doug on the sidelines, not in the booth, fought through the rain, watched it was all falling into place. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's a fresh start.
Yeah.
You go from there, and we'll see what Dave wants to do with it. I'm sure that, with all due respect, anytime there's a change, there is the possibility in a couple of spots or maybe of a couple square peg round hole moments. You know, not everybody, quote, fits everything that you're doing. But I'm just saying that's a possibility. But we'll find out from him in just a few minutes as to what he thought about it. Penn State football, the blue-white game, 61,000 there on Saturday. That was the number we were given. Who knows how many people were in the parking lot. What a gorgeous day Saturday was. Wow. What was it, 70 to 75? It was beautiful out.
Carnival, very, very popular for the families.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it was great, too, I think, for fans who wanted to listen to what was going on, to get the commentary of Jack Ham and his evaluation of the football team. Because Jack puts a lot into it. He not only puts in the time and goes to some practices here and there, because it's not as easy, obviously, for him. For me, it's easy. I just get in the car, and 5 minutes later, I'm at the practice field. But Jack not only does that, but he sits down. He's been in meetings with coaches and talked with them. He's been in their coaches' meeting to get a feel for what's going on. And I think Jack's commentary in a blue-white game is invaluable for those who choose to listen to the radio and to hear what he has to say. It's invaluable, the perspective that he gives. You know, giving evaluations on players and where they stand. I mean, look, they've got some really good young players. There's no getting around it. I don't think it takes a genius to sit there and look at Adisa Isaac and not say, well, there's an athlete out there that has some ability. Keaton Ellis, there's, you know, Marquise Wilson, Tyler Rudolph. Haven't really talked about him. There's another guy you look at and say, okay, you know what? There's another athlete out there that down the road has the potential to help. I mean, you can see that in the young players that they brought in. Brenton Strange. Yeah, the first week for Brenton Strange was, okay, let's get to a learning curve and get a feel for this thing. Then after the first week, you know, I've had a couple talks with Tyler Bowen. And Tyler says, I think we got something here. Well, you can see in the scrimmage on Saturday what he's talking about. The beauty of the Brenton Strange situation is this, that if it plays out the way you hope, you know, Pat Freiermuth, Nick Bowers, Zach Kuntz, he's got three guys in front of him where you don't have to sit there and rush him in. And I think that a couple spots along the way where you don't have to rush somebody, you know, let's take Adisa Isaac. Well, you've got Shaka Toney, Daniel George, Jason Owe, Yitor Gross-Matos, Nick Tarburton. And we'll see what, you know, hopefully when they start camp, Shame Simmons is available. Well, that's six guys. Now, do you have to rush Adisa Isaac? If Adisa Isaac shows that he's better than a couple of guys, they'll play him. But if he needs a little bit more on the learning curve, they've got some time at that position to let him develop. I think, to me, a lot of people have discussed, and I understand people have been concerned about the recruiting at defensive tackle. They feel like there have been a couple of guys that Penn State's had a shot at that maybe they didn't get, whatever. It's been a topic of conversation. I get that. But then I look at the defensive tackle spot. Robert Windsor. I think you pretty much know from Robert Windsor what you're going to get. And he played very well, I thought, in the second, especially in the second half of the season. He played very well. So that's a known entity. Antonio Shelton played last year. But now we're seeing a guy that I don't see getting moved off the line of scrimmage. Whenever I watch him, I'm seeing somebody that you feel like the worst he gets out of it, the worst, is a stalemate. That's not bad. That sets up your linebackers when you get a stalemate. But Antonio Shelton has been playing better and better and better. Now you go behind him, P.J. Mustipher. P.J. Mustipher, we all know the potential he has. It's a question of fulfilling it on the field. He shows flashes of it. Okay. But then the other guy that has stepped in where you sat back and go, huh, is Damian Barber. And I mentioned this on the broadcast Saturday. You know, Damian Barber here is kind of just, he's gone along and you just been waiting for him to do something and kick it into a gear. And, I mentioned how DJ Brown in the bowl practice, started like, oh, okay. Now, a corner, you're looking at a corner. They're out in an exposed area. So it's easier to get a quicker read on somebody like that. So I watched DJ Brown in the bowl practice. And like, hey, DJ Brown's making some plays out here. All right. You ask yourself, I wonder if that will continue in the spring. And to DJ Brown's credit, it did. But Damian Barber on the inside, you kept waiting for him and waiting for him. A couple of years worth. And even in the bowl practice, in the first week, but then all of a sudden the last 3 weeks. Now, what causes the light to go on? What allows a guy to play a little bit faster? What allows a guy to anticipate more? You have to ask them. But Damian Barber was really playing some good football the last 3 weeks when I watched him. Good football. Now you look at that defensive tackle spot, you're saying, you know what? They're going to be okay there. Now you get Fred Hansard back in there. And Fred was in the was able to practice this spring, was a huge plus. Now you get five guys there. And that allows Judge Culpepper. And there's no doubt, Judge Culpepper is better now than he was a year ago. I mean, Judge Culpepper is better now than he was last August. But is he ready to go in and move Robert Windsor out of there? No. No, not yet. Aeneas Hawkins. Those are defensive tackles 6 and 7. Suddenly, you're looking around saying, they're not so bad there. They're pretty good there. And I've always felt that Culpepper and Hawkins are two guys, if you give them another year, that once they get to their third year in the program, okay. So this is only year two for them. So, I kind of looked at them last preseason. When I looked at them last preseason, I thought, in a couple of years, these guys are going to help. But I did not sit back and say, well, Judge Culpepper is going to help now or Hawkins will help. No. But I think they've put the, they've stayed on that track where they're going to be guys that help this program down the road, and they've stayed on that track. I told the story with Rich Scarsella. I know I've told this before, but in the 2000s, Jack and I would go in, and when we looked at the linebackers, we always looked at the third group first. Why? Because the first two groups were known entities to us. The third group was going to be the group that down the road was would help the program when their time came. And every time we go in there, Jack said, boy, I really like him. I really like him. And then during the troubled times, we'd look at the first group linebackers, and then we'd look at the second group, and we'd look at each other and we'd say, I hope nobody in the first group gets hurt. That's how thin it was at that time at that spot. Well, the offensive line and the linebackers out of the sanctions era, and I knew the offensive line would be the slowest to come back. I mean, I don't think it takes any genius. I think anybody could sit in this chair and would have realized that at the time. But linebacker was the other part that was the slowest on the curve to come back. Now you look at the linebackers. I mean, you're looking at the ones, twos, threes in the spring. The white team had, you know, essentially the threes. There's Brandon Smith over there. He's going to end up being really good here if he continues on the track he's on. Got off to a slow start. A lot of thinking, a lot of doing it by the numbers. And now the last couple of weeks, you can see his instincts kicking in because now his comfort level with what's going on around him is kicking in. Or even a guy like Max Chismar. Charlie Catchier. Okay? But you look at Lance Dixon. Long. Athletic. I want to say Dixon's in the 6'2", 6'3" range. Brandon Smith's right around 6'3", 6'4". This goes with a 6'5 Cam Brown, who's a senior. It goes with a 6'3 Micah Parsons, who's a sophomore. And then you got Jan Johnson anchoring the middle. And I'll tell you, I think all of you know, I really like Ellis Brooks. I really do. I think Ellis Brooks gets in. Ellis Brooks and Jan Johnson, that's, to me, a great situation where you feel like when you go to the, quote, 1B guy, there's no drop-off from the 1A guy. But that's where so much has improved, is the depth across the board. Now, do I think they need one more safety to step up? Yes. I'm talking about in terms of the depth. They need another safety to step up. It wouldn't hurt to see another wide receiver step up. Because when I'm thinking about groupings, you're saying, one more safety. Which safety spot? Yeah, whoa, slow down. I'm thinking about two deep here. So I'm talking about a fourth safety. I'm talking about a sixth wide receiver. You know, a lot of teams are in the same situation. I mean, you look at Ohio State, Michigan. Well, not so much Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State has a lot of people back. They have more back than Michigan, Ohio State, or Penn State. How about the guy that bought the... Did you see the Michigan banner? They flew a plane over Michigan Stadium, and the planes and the banner on the back said, hey, Jim, this is God. It's okay to throw in first down. Now, who goes out and just decides to take their money and invest in that?
So with lots and lots of disposable income, they won't think twice about it, and will still get a good night's sleep.
Well, they're one up on me.
I got two of us.
Like, holy cow.
This just didn't feel like calling in the local TV show. Didn't Jim do like a Monday night show during the season? Guess he didn't want to wait till the fall. So,
oh, but I'll bet that show's a doozy to listen to.
I thought it was like a Monday night show from some pizza place in Ann Arbor. Maybe they don't do that anymore, but.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, if believe me, if Learfield IMG thinks they can sell it, then they're doing it. Because remember, I mean, you know, because part of the coach's salary comes from doing those shows and things like that, so that's part of it. So I guarantee you that despite tremendous reluctance, Jim does it. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Hi, this is Steve Jones inviting you to be part of the 28th Annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament to benefit the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. We'll kick off the event with a special broadcast on WKOK Tuesday, May 7th, starting at 3 at Penn's Tavern, south of Sunbury. Then Wednesday, May 8th at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club, golf the morning or afternoon flight, four-person scramble, and win great prizes. To sign up your team today and for more information, call the Sunbury Y at 570-286-5636.
Okay, we had told you that Dave Cicchini was going to be on the show today, but they had donor meetings today. He will try and join us tomorrow at either 3:35 or 4:35. They said something about as soon as the color analyst coughs up. I don't know what that meant.
Coughing? Oh, coughs up. Oh, okay. I mean, coughing. Okay. Just checking.
I have awards. Okay, great. You people think you're funny?
And we'll talk more blue-white tomorrow with Audrey Snyder.
She'll be on the show at 4:06 tomorrow. And Neil Coulong returns tomorrow.
All right, draft talk.
Oh, we are counting down to the draft. The NFL draft. Might the Giants go after Russell Wilson? And trade their pick? Wow.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.